Welcome to
Shy at the Nile. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast that y'all been waiting for. My name is Fatima.
And I'm Wamda.
And we are your hosts. Last episode, y'all remember we talked about Wamda's journey really from law to studying herbalism. Mm-hmm. And today's episode, we're going to really talk about the journey of Two Niles. So with that being said, I really want to start with you talking about, you know, like, what was your journey with entrepreneurship? Like, what did, like, you know, did you experience it really early in your life? Was it something that you always knew that you kind of wanted to get into later on in life?
So entrepreneurship has always been a part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, when we were younger, my dad, like a lot of foreign dads, he owned gas stations. He also had like cell phone stores, and he had like bargain stores. So I just kind of grew up with that, you know. I grew up opening the stores, closing the stores, counting the money, dealing with different customers. My dad actually was the first person to teach me about different drug addictions. Like, you know, if someone who was on meth walk in, he would be like, "That's a meth head. That's a crack head. That's someone that is high."
He was telling you the symptoms and stuff too.
Yeah, because his store was off of Independence, and if everybody knows, like, Independence, Missouri is like meth head town.
Oh yeah, meth head capital of the United States.
Exactly. So it was like different people had different, they were addicted on different things, and my father kind of just told me, like, you know, this is what this person has and all that. So I learned that. At first, I used to be scared, but then eventually you get used to it. You know how to talk to them.
Mm.
You know how they look if they're too high, if they're, you know, you just know how to sell to them and just how to deal with them in a transaction.
Girl, you sound like you're talking about drugs.
It is.
Sell drugs.
No. Sell the products that my father was selling in his store. Like, do transactions. So
no.
That's basically what happened with that specific thing. So after we close the store, of course, we count the money. So my dad taught me how to count the money properly, how to, you know, we went to the bank to deposit the money. So I've seen that happen so often in my life, but I never thought, say, I'm going to open up a store when I get older. I never realized that, but your parents and people who mentor you or people who are around you, they have an influence on you, even if it's on a subconscious level. So that's what I end up learning.
How old were you at this point? Because you must have been really young.
Yeah, well, I think when my dad opened up his first store, I was probably like 8 or 9.
Mm.
10 years old, maybe like 10.
He was little.
And before then, my dad had an ice cream truck.
Oh.
So it was, you know, he owned the ice cream truck. He just did different things, and I was able to witness that. I was able to witness, like, freedom of time, you know, working whenever, you know, around your time, you scheduled your own timing and all that. And my dad got a chance to close the store and come and take a lunch break, or we took lunch over there. So I just got to see my dad, like, within his own freedom, make his money and mm-hmm. bring the, you know, money home and all that. So that was my initial introduction into entrepreneurship. And then my father also had friends, and a lot of times when his friends needed someone to babysit the store or store sit, my brother and I were able to do that.
Store sitting is crazy.
Yeah.
What would that look like?
That would look like one of his friends going to Chicago to bring inventory, and they need someone to sit at, you know, the store. So
you'd run it.
Yeah, me and my brother would sit there in the store, and they trusted us enough, you know, to deal with the transactions. If we had any questions, we would call the person.
Mm.
But it taught us to be responsible. And, you know, at that time, the way we were raised and stuff, you know, we didn't do anything that we knew would, you know, get us in trouble. We just took care of the store as if it was our own. And that might be for 24 hours, that might be for 48 hours, 72 hours. It just depends on how long the person, when they're going to get inventory, when they're coming back. So, you know, we did that for some time. So that also taught us, you know, entrepreneurship. And a lot of times we were learning lessons more than we were getting paid money. So, because they sold these things that everybody wanted, my dad used to sell shoes. So, he would be like, if you work for this long, I'll give you these shoes. You know, I'll let you eat this. And then he had snacks, gummy bears, you know, just different things that kids like. So, mm-hmm. it was our motivation. But it really taught us a lot of valuable lessons. So, it taught us how to work with different people, different personalities, and just how to make sure you were operating day-to-day, you know, operations and all that. So, that was my initial introduction into entrepreneurship. But it wasn't in my head to, like, own something,
yeah,
per se. So
no, I love that. The Baba's so adorable, like, giving y'all stuff in order.
Yeah, my dad is the best. Like, he was able to open up a lot of doors for people. So I've got to see that too, and I've got to see the downfall of business. Like, when things didn't go accordingly with my father, I got to see the downside of business, and I definitely got to see the upside of business. So I think a lot of that just kind of, like, sits in, and I still have sometimes we can't outgrow our parents, like, in our heads. Mm-hmm. Whatever they taught us is there, and we're like them in so many ways, but we get introduced to those ways as we grow.
Yeah.
So I definitely still deal with that, so...
Okay, but yeah, that's definitely true. Okay, so I want to know now, so you experienced entrepreneurship at a really young age. I didn't even know you was like 8, whatever.
Yeah,
that's
like
crazy.
8 or 9, yeah, because when my dad had an ice cream truck, I was probably like 7 or 8, and my dad was definitely that ice cream truck.
You was riding around, dude.
Yeah, but not just that, like, my dad used to, like, literally give free ice cream to everybody on the block, and then after... He, you know, got done doing the ice cream truck. He would give, like, the ice cream man $100 or $50 bill at the time of, like, 1998 or 99. That was a big deal. He'd give them $50 or $100, say, give all the kids ice cream. So, you know, I just got a chance to see my dad, you know, do so much. But definitely the ice cream truck was an adventure within itself. So
I can only imagine. Yeah. Okay, so now tell me, like, what inspired the name Two Niles, you know, because you grew up to eventually own your own business. And I'm sure that people want to know about that.
So Two Niles is the blue and the white Nile, and they run all around Africa, but they meet in Sudan. So they meet in Khartoum. And so I wanted to basically, that's a whole different thing. Like, I wanted to always do something with my culture because I come from a very rich culture with, you know, resources and the people and the hospitality and the love and the herbs and everything. And I always wanted to create something within my own culture. Like, I always feel like going back to your roots, learning yourself, your family, your ancestry, and tying it up to something that is valuable now, it's very fruitful. So I always wanted to do that. I just didn't know where I was going with it.
Yeah.
Initially, we named the business Two Niles Botanicals, but we decided to name it Two Niles Company because we knew that we were going to be working with more than just the herbal side of business. So, yeah, I really just wanted something to portray where I came from. And I was just like, man, the blue Nile, does it, you know, it sounds okay. But I was like, maybe I hear that too often, the white Nile. And I was just like, well... What can make it be something where you recognize where does the two Nile rivers, where do they meet? And, you know, it's in Sudan, so I thought it was the perfect name for it, so.
Were there any other names that you were thinking about at the time? Like, how long did that process even take? Because I feel like naming a business is such a huge, like, it's a big
that
thing.
That took me a while. I think it took me maybe, like, close to a month. Well, first, shout out to Rami Dawood. He has a song called The Mughran. And it's a really beautiful song. I believe it's still on YouTube. You guys can look it up. But the song, the chorus go, where are you from? I'm from where the waters meet. Where you from? I'm from where the waters meet.
I heard that song.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, it kept repeating in my head. And I played that song like 100 times. I probably gave you the most views on me. But it was such a beautiful song. And it just like made me emotional too. And I kept, you know, listening to it. And even like him rapping about Sudan and, you know, just the culture. It just reminds you how rich it is. And so I played that song more times than I can count. And that played a big part in naming Two Niles because I'm like, where the waters meet, where the waters meet. That kept repeating in my head. And everyone was, my boss that I was working with, it's another story that connects to, you know, the name. So at the time I was working for a healthcare agency and the owner of the healthcare agency, he kept on talking to me about branding, like creating my LLC because he got tired of me doing transactions at Bethlehem Home Healthcare. He got tired of me, like, people coming up meeting me without me having something to, like, secure me or back me up. So he was like, did you create your LLC yet? Did you create it? And I was like, no, Pastor, maybe I have to. He said, you're going to create your LLC right now. And so he literally came behind the desk and he was like, go ahead, go to the IRS website, click that. Okay, do you have a name? And then I was just like, okay, so I put Two Niles Botanicals. Yeah. And it was like, okay, cool. Do you have the money or you need my credit card? Because you're going to secure this today.
Oh.
Yeah, paperwork printed out. He said, congratulations. You have you a company now. And so
I love that. He literally was like, you about to do it right now. He held you accountable.
Yeah, because he was like, you should be doing more than what you're doing for me. What are you doing? He was like, you're made to be doing more. You see all these transactions, people coming in to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. So older people are so precious to me, you know, they're always guiding me, teaching me, and I'm always grateful for anyone that I've ever met that, you know, pushed me towards a direction that maybe I was dragging my feet to go. So,
no, for real.
Yeah, but You know, two nouns cold. Now we're here.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I love how, like, he really was more than a mentor to you. Really, like, it was, like, he was so invested in your journey that he was, like...
Yeah, because he seen, like, how many people were coming to the job to pick up products. Mm-hmm. And he knew my adventures of, like, going from one thing to another. And he was like, you belong in business.
I love that.
He said, you don't see that? You don't see all these things that are happening? I was like, no.
I need to meet him.
Yeah, he's so sweet. He's literally one of those people who are, like, gold in this world. Because he didn't even want me to work on the things that he assigned me to do. He wanted me to form my LLC. So I can, you know, do what I was doing. And so, yeah, shout out to Pastor Mabian.
That's so crazy that you mentioned that, you know, people was coming up to you and you were selling CMOS. You were slinging CMOS at the home care business.
Yeah, I was. I really was.
I need you to talk about what was the early days of $2. What was it looking like?
So I feel like everyone was on for... you know, my journey with $2 and selling. First, I started selling off CMOS. I studied CMOS for maybe like close to 10 years. I'm one of those methodical people, and sister can attest to this, because once I start studying something, I go down a rabbit hole. And then once I go down that rabbit hole, I'm just kind of like living in that rabbit hole until someone comes and pull me out.
Let me tell them, the methodical, another word for methodical is should be moving slow. At a turtle pace.
I do. I have to learn everything, the ins and outs. So I literally started studying different strands of CMOS. I started reaching out to people. I got in touch with marine biologists. So people who study the ocean, they started to teach me about seaweed. They put me up on books. I literally went through everything to find like the best type of CMOS. And I still work with the person that I was connected to for the authentic CMOS that you see today in stores. So what was it? What was the question?
Oh yeah, the question was, tell us about the early days of $2. Where were you selling? Like, did you have it in your car? I'm confused.
All right, everybody was in on it, because originally my mom was like, you need to start selling the CMOS. You know, the ones I was making for her, because she's like, it helped me out. She said it helped my joints. It helped, you know, me like be focused with these children that I'm teaching. Mom teaches children. And so I was just like, okay, so I made it. But when I was making it, it was so much. Like, the CMOS expanded. I didn't realize that this much would make me, like 2 ounces of it was going to make me like 8 jars of CMOS, 16 ounces of CMOS. So I started making it in the kitchen. And when I started making it, I remember I took a picture, and this picture is still up. And I was just talking about how I regularly talk to the audience or people on Facebook. Like, I got some CMOS. This is what the CMOS does and all that. And contrary to popular belief, I was one of the first people in Kansas City to start selling CMOS. Mm. Then I started seeing everybody else sell CMOS.
Ooh.
Yeah. But anyway, made the CMOS. And my DMs went crazy. You know, people started reaching out to me. They were like, I'm going to pay you double for that. And I was selling it at the time for $25 per jar. And I didn't know anything. I didn't know about inventory. I didn't even calculate anything. I just got it from the man. Did I talk about already how the man sent me?
Yeah.
I did? Okay. So anyway, it went crazy. And people were like, they were reaching out to my DM like, I'll pay you double for that. Can you meet me here? Can you meet me there? So I just did what was in my head, and I was just like, okay, well, I'll pull up. I'll meet you. So literally from sun up to sundown, I was pulling up on people. They were pulling up on me. They were coming to the healthcare agency, and then I also worked at a hotel at a time. They were coming to the hotel, meeting up to for these transactions, CMOS transactions. I was pushing CMOS. So I started to make this money, and it kind of messed with my head, because I was just like, oh, my God, like, we might be going somewhere with this, you know? Long story short, I was making more than what I made with my degree. And I just knew that I was going somewhere with this. I just didn't know where I was going until somebody requested some CMOS in Alaska. And I shipped
That's
to Alaska.
Crazy.
Yeah. And I didn't even know. I didn't even calculate the shipping prices or anything. I just was charging people $10 for shipping, because sometimes it would fluctuate from $6 to $8 to $10. So I'm like, you know, I got to buy these packages. Let me tell you how ghetto this was. So, you know, I work for 2 different businesses. I work for a hotel and I work for Pastor. Do you know, like, everybody that worked with me started donating, like, bubble wraps? They were donating boxes, like, the boxes they were getting from their shipments. They were, and in the hotel, they'll be like, yeah, Mom, we got you these stack of boxes.
I remember.
Yeah.
I remember.
Shout out to everyone that worked with me at the hotels and the health Bethlehem Healthcare Agency, because they were literally like bring a whole bunch at theater, like I got a surprise for you, and they will literally surprise me with boxes. And so that's how it worked. It started off with everyone just helping me. And even like the labels and all that, like people were just like, you're doing good. Here's some more bubbles for you. Hey, have you tried to put this, even a journey of like getting the ice in there, the melted ice, the dry ice, that was something else. But people are paying me extra to ship it like cold. So it was so fun, but I learned the business this way. Then I remember one time my dad sent me down and he was just like, you got to do your calculations right, because, okay, well, what are you selling? How much are you selling to people? And it was just like, how much is the shipping again? So I gave him like three different places to ship to, like California, Texas, and and it was another place that we were shipping to all the time. I think it was like New York, New Jersey, and then Texas and California. So we were shipping to them all the time. And I remember we're calculating, and my dad was like, are you realizing you're making this beep, 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 beep profit? You can beep that out. And so, and I was just like, no, I didn't. He said, yeah, this is how much you're making in profit. Blew my mind. Blew my, because I know how to sell something, but I'm not really good at math. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and calculate everything. I know how to subtract. I know how to multiply. I know how to divide. But anything outside of that, I didn't know how to calculate. So when my dad did that, he just kind of like took everyone, you know, blew everyone off. But the pandemic happened. So when the pandemic happened, I remember I started selling CMOS like crazy. That's when sales started like quadrupling. And then people were asking for something else. They asked for the elderberry because everyone was selling elderberry. And then I remember the elderberry journey is a different journey too. So someone that was a friend of mine, you know, he was having walking pneumonia. And he was saying that he was really sick. He was constricted of, mm-hmm. like, breathing. And he was just like, man, I'm not feeling good at all. I don't know what's wrong with me. And he was saying that he was going to go to the hospital. I'm like, nah, don't go to the hospital. I got you. This is before the pandemic happened.
Yeah.
And I literally went in my cabinet. I found some karkade, which is hibiscus.
Oh.
Yeah, I had some elderberry in there, some ginger. And then I had different herbs in there, just literally in my cabinet. And then I was just like, man, I'm going to put the shelter in there, too. I know this is going to do something to him because he needs to breathe better. Yeah. So I made it for him, put some medicinal honey in there that I so happened to have in my cabinet as well. And, you know, I brought it to him, you know, and it was in like in a tomato paste glass jar that we had from Whole Foods. And so he drank it. And I'm telling you, he was like, hey, he called me. He was like, what did you put in that bottle? What is that you gave me in that jar? And I was just like, it's a concoction I made. It was in my... He said, whatever that shit is, you need to sell it. He said, sell it, because he said, I've never felt like this before. He said, I feel like I have so much energy. He was like, I coughed out all that mucus. He said, I don't know what was in my chest, but I coughed it out. He said, I'm feeling good. And so I remember that recipe after the pandemic happened. I put it together. So I started selling it as a combo.
So that was the tonic.
Yeah, the tonic.
Dang, that was the first time you made the tonic.
Yeah, that was the very first time. And then I remember when people started, I was like, I never made elderberry, but then it dawned on me that I made it. Yeah.
But that makes sense, though, because you knew the ingredients, like the herbs, so well that you had put in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So it made sense.
Yeah, it made sense. And I'm just thinking, like, you know, people are sick. What do they need? You know, they're constricted of breathing. Some people told me their taste buds. So I'm like, this is definitely going to activate the olfactory. This is definitely going to, you know, I was just thinking about all the things that's going to be released once they take this tonic. So.
We're not sponsored. They ain't sponsoring us. So you don't get featured.
Yeah. So anyway, I started combining them together. But I just kind of got tired of, like, after a few months, I got tired of meeting up with people. It just became too much because as much as I love the community, it just gets tiring. Every person that you meet up to do a transaction with, they want to ask you other questions, like health questions.
Oh, yeah, no, that makes sense.
They want to have a whole consultation sessions, and it was just kind of like me, yeah, on the go. And I'm like, it was hot, you know, I'm running out of gas while I'm talking to people, and then I'm trying to be nice, and, you know, 20, 30 minutes turned into an hour, and then someone else is waiting. It was just too much. I'm talking about, I was in, like, all the hoods.
Yeah, I remember. You had, people was driving and making deliveries.
Yeah, people were coming from Leavenworth. People were coming from Topeka. People were coming from, like,
that's
Lawrence.
Crazy.
And these places, if you're not from Kansas City, they're, like, 30, 45 minutes, an hour away from Kansas City. So you can only imagine. what that was. Like, when people meet you halfway and you gotta wait for them, and then they bring their kids. It's just, it was very chaotic. So I had to transition to something else, and I didn't know what that looked like. And so I remember one of my brother, this guy, he's like a biological brother to me, for real. Like, he reached out to me, and he was like, you know, sister, why don't you bring it to the grocery store? And that was the Rahman Market in Independence Avenue.
His family ran it, right?
Yeah, his family ran it. And, you know, we're like family. So he was just like, bring it to the store. You know, I started selling it my brother's first, my brother's dealership. And so at the time, I'm like, it's going to work out fine, because I'm not even knowing. I'm thinking business-like, because I'm like, people come to my brother's shop, they're going to get their oil changed, or they're going to get their tires rotate, something. And then they can also do a transaction there, you know, do a, get some CMOS from there. But while they're there, they're going to remember. And so I thought it was a win-win. But then, shit, when you work with siblings, you never know. My brother might need some oil, and then he'll be like, oh, I took $15 to go get this, you know. So that was ghetto. And so I had to learn, like, what else to do, because then, you know, after some time, I just didn't like that. And my brother, other brother, reached out to me and was just like, I have a grocery store. Why don't you just sell your CMOS here? I heard you have a good product. You would do really well here. You know, it's in the city, and you could just drop it off, and I'll you know, we'll figure something out. And he was even like, don't pay me. And I'm like, you know, it was crazy. So once he told me that, he told me a few times before I actually put the products there, because I'm one of those people that don't like change, like not drastic change like that. And then people were so used to the dealership that I didn't want to change the address on them, because then that's a whole nother thing. But anyway, it ended up being in a grocery store. I took it to the grocery store, and my brother was in there. Anytime, and when he ran out of CMOS or elderberry tonic, he would call me. When I tell you I would go in there, he would be like pulling up some tea, giving them to the customers, having a conversation with them about whatever it is that was going on.
Yeah.
He took care of those customers. And so I just really appreciated that. Like, you know, I really appreciated that. So he started selling there, and then we were both, at the time, it was just fun. You know, it was fun having your products there. They were secure. I mean, have someone taking money from me and telling me, let me get pay you this the next time, or, you know, whatever. So it was nice. And then my brother was like, sister, the health department is coming. He was just like, you got to put some labels on these. And I'm like, what labels? I don't like change.
were forced to do it, though, at that point.
I was forced.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm about to have an inspection here, sister. And, you know, the health department is really strict. You got to put some labels on here, because they're going to make me take this out. They don't know what this is and all that. And this is that your product.
Hold up. So this whole time you were selling without labels?
Without labels.
Okay. Yeah.
Shout out to everyone that got my products without labels. So anyway, y'all niggas can't see this because y'all not sponsoring us. But anyway, so I remember, he was like, I said, man, where am I going to create labels from? You know, I'm not even thinking to use people around me. So this is another, you know, venture. I'm like, who's going to do it? Ding. What did I think? I have a very creative sister here.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So sister, I literally was calling her. I think I was on the verge of tears. Like, sister, man, can you, like, do labels for me or something? And I think sister was like, what you mean the label? I was like, I don't know. It's for the mason jars. I don't remember what the exact conversation was, but I needed some labels. And then Dexter Laboratory here, she went down, and we were, like, upstairs in the room. This was at your mom's house.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
So I went to there, and we were like, yeah, let's do it. And she pulled up Canva. I don't know what you pulled up.
It was my iPad, y'all. I had my iPad and the Apple Pencil, and I was just
this
drawing.
This is where you insert the picture of the...
I'm going to insert it. Yeah.
So we were up there, and I'm like, yeah, I just wanted to, like... First, we had to come up with the mortar and pestle. And I'm like, yeah, I want my logo to be the mortar and pestle, because that always reminds me of home. That's the old school way of, like, blending and, you know, dicing up herbs. So yeah. I was like, mortar and pestle. I'm telling you, this vision was in my head forever. I'm like, mortar and pestle, and a little herb popping out of it, like a leaf or something. It just kept, that vision would not leave me. Even before I had the name, I thought about that mortar and pestle. And so... She was like, where do you want it? I said, yeah, just, I don't know, like in the middle somewhere. So sister figured out how to position and how things are going to look like. But my thing was, I wanted CMOS to be written the way I write CMOS. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like cursive kind of in a way. And I thought it was so dope. Like, at this point, I'm like, I was in love with the label. I didn't think it was going to look so good. Little did I know that wasn't even going to be the final form.
We got to insert that, too.
Yeah. Like, we had, like, three different forms before we got to our final form. So, I remember, you know, we did the labels, and my brother at the store was like, yeah, sister, I'm going to keep this label right here. He's like, this label, I'm going to keep it because he said it's going places. He said, I know it's going places. I have a good feeling about it. I'm going to keep this. And he was so impressed by how the label looked. It looks so dope. And so
that's crazy because the one now we have now looks way
better.
It's
so much better. Yeah. And then we went through the whole trial of getting the quality type of paper for the label. And then waterproof because it was in the refrigerator.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's so crazy. I feel like every time something happened.
You're learning from it.
And you learn from it. And then you have to like iterate. Okay, let's make this a little bit better. Because now we have something new that popped up.
Yeah, and then I had to learn to trust the process because you remember I was always stuck. Like sister and I fought so much because I was always stuck in my ways. Like whatever was good, I felt like it was good for that time, and that was it. Halas, don't change it, you know. And sister was always trying to evolve and make things better, and I was just like, why do you keep on wanting to change it? He was like, sister, it literally doesn't look good. Nobody uses cursive anymore. So
it's because it just be hard, you know, because they don't teach it in schools anymore either.
Yeah. And I wasn't even thinking of that. I'm thinking of my like old school way of just something looking nice, you know, on the shelf. And then we went through like the nutritional fact of like calculating. Yeah. And that was another thing too. Yeah. Because it was in the grocery store. And so, yeah, that's kind of like how it went. And next thing you know,
you remember the barbershop selling in the barbershop?
Oh, yeah. And then I had another friend, shout out to him. Greg, at New Urban Barber. I remember he was telling me, I would always sit down and talk, have conversations with him. And, you know, in the barber shops, they have, like, all type of people there. They have chemists there. They have engineers. Like, them men talk about some, you know, productive things. So, anyway, I remember we used to always talk about sea moss and herbs in general. He would call me his Indian herb lady. I'm like, bro, I'm Sudanese. But, anyway, he was like, I remember he was just like, oh, you got some sea moss? He was like, bring it to the warehouse.
He calls you the Indian herb lady? Hold up.
That's it. I'm Sudanese.
He play too much. He know you African. You African. No, he can't. It's the hair. It's the hair.
Yeah, the skin, the hair. But anyway, he was like.
He said he was Indian. Yes. Bro, that's crazy.
Yeah. He is crazy. But anyway, he's like, bring some here. So I brought me a box which had 12 jars of sea moss in there. And I was bringing it to the warehouse. I was like, yeah, I got it here. But I was kind of like shy because there was a lot of men there. And I'm just used to talking to him and interacting with him. He like put me on spot like, tell them. And then he was like, this is my Indian herb lady. Tell them. And he was just like, you Indian, you can sell anything. And
I
was
That's like, crazy. What the fuck? Yeah. At what point did you stop and be like, actually, I'm black?
I keep telling him that. I keep telling him that. But he, I don't know, in his head, I don't know. But anyway, I started telling him, like, yeah, sea moss does this and that. And when I tell you, all these men were like googly eyed looking at me, and then they were like, let me buy that. Are you selling that? And I was just like, yeah, I'm selling it. So when I tell you, I was sold out, and I have like 7 more people who are coming after me for like some sea moss. And then I had to come back, I had to re up and come back. So that went crazy. And I was just like, dang, you know, that was quick. It wasn't even 30 minutes when I was there, and the transaction happened so fast. And he's like, you should put it in here. So I'm like, okay, cool, location. So now I have a location, you know, down north. Then I have a location up north, which is North Kansas City, and then down north is northeast area. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, cool. And in my head, I was just like, man, if I could get a location in Kansas, if I could get a location. Because I seen how easy it was, and then it took the burden off of me of traveling and pulling up on people and then pulling up on me, the conversation. It cut a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So I was able to focus on a lot more things. But we got super busy because I was never sitting down. Like, I was never sitting down. I was always just working on this, that, and then I had to get the labels. That was another thing to add to our, you know, inventory of things that we need to purchase. So I just learned that, and I got into that rhythm. And I wasn't even aware of, like, how much money was coming in because I was too busy, you know, just moving it around and stuff. And then I remember eventually we outgrew the kitchen, my mother's kitchen, because it was too much. People needed more orders, you know. And I remember I would go to the store to get the clean water. It was like a 5-stage cleaner because I was very big on like making sure everything was clean. The water, stainless steel. I made sure the glass was like lead free. So all the things that I've learned in my past about, you know, minimizing microplastics and minimizing lead and all that. I added all that to what I was doing in the business. Like I was, to this day, I'm just very meticulous about like making sure everything is clean and done in a correct manner. And so we outgrew that, and I'm like, damn, I need a warehouse. I need somewhere else, a commercial kitchen. I need to purchase something. And that's when you and I, you know, we kind of started talking, and we were like, I said, sister, you got to help me. You got to help me. I didn't know nothing about, like, paperwork or, you know, what does a warehouse look like? What do I need in there? And that's why I say when you start the entrepreneurship journey, you don't know what you need along the way, but you have to jump. You have to start, because if you don't start, you're going to always think about the things that are stopping you from taking that step. You're going to always go to what's comfortable. You literally have to take that risk, you know? You can't. Yeah. And it is kind of challenging when so many people having responsibilities, but you have to understand what are you going to do that's going to benefit you in the long run with what you currently have, you know? So, Al-Muhim, that's what happened. We ended up looking at like 3 or 4 different warehouses. And we were asking questions. We were like Googling what questions to ask about.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I remember. Yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, and at this time, sister, you just purchased this home a year or so before we got into the business. And so you kind of knew a little bit about like what to look for in the contract. But a warehouse is different than a home. A commercial property is different than purchasing a home. But the paperwork things and the agreements and all that. So we were literally sitting there looking through every detail of all the paperwork to make sure that we were getting a good deal.
Yeah.
And we landed, you know, in the warehouse that we're currently in. And
it was a steal.
Yeah, it was definitely a steal during the pandemic.
We got so lucky. We got so lucky. Like, there's no way we could have got a deal like this today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like everything aligned how we needed to, because I remember when finding that guy, how we found him and how I reached out to him and was just like, hey, and it was like I was like, man, I'm so tired of looking. Let's just, whatever warehouse we get, let's just land on it. And so we ended up finding the warehouse and we moved in and, you know, we're at now. And then the whole journey about like commercial everything, we had to get commercial blenders. We had to get commercial boilers. We had to, all the things, commercial sinks and commercial everything. That was another thing because we didn't know about that. Yeah. We didn't know the cost of all that. But alhamdulillah, you know, Allah saw us fit to be in the position that we're in. And even though we learned so much, we're still learning. There's always something new to learn. So, yeah.
Okay, dang, that's so crazy. I feel like all the emotions are rushing back, like, back to me, all the memories and stuff. Yeah, because I'm proud of you.
Oh, sister. I'm proud of us.
Yeah, alhamdulillah. But I have a question for you, though. My question for you is, you know, it's so crazy because I remember really early on, you were like, yeah, I'm going to get into Whole Foods. How much do you feel like your go-getter attitude? Because for me, I feel like you're very much a go-getter. How much do you feel like that's... Actually, let me figure out how to phrase this because I feel like I don't like this question no more. Okay, so you were talking about like how you were selling in the barbershop, you sold in grocery stores, and, you know, your friend's grocery store without even a label. That is a really, like, far way to come to now, today, to be in Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, honestly, Whole Foods is very clean, and I enjoy the feeling. For me, it's more of a feeling. You know, whenever you go into a grocery store, you can feel, like, if something is good. You can feel the change in the atmosphere. Initially, I was like, I enjoyed the direct-to-consumer transactions so much that I wanted to keep it that way, because when we got into Nature's Own Health Market, which is the first store that we got into, they actually requested my CMOS because the demand was so high and people were going to that store for my particular CMOS, like
literally. As they should.
And so when we got to negotiating, that's another thing with business, like they wanted me to sell it to them lower, and I didn't know about wholesale. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
now we do.
Yeah, now we know a lot.
We got a catalog.
Yeah, we got a whole catalog now. But I was just like, what do you mean? Why don't you just buy it from me at this? You know, I didn't know about margins. So I had to learn about margins and all that. But I was just like, why are they trying to buy it from me at this amount of money? Why can't they just buy it from me? And then, I learned all that whole process. And then I was just like, It makes more sense to me the more the orders kept coming in from that store. When it started becoming twice a week, three times a week, and they were ordering a large amount, it made sense to me for the long run that people could go there, and you know, it takes a burden off of me, and then it's just it leaves less work for me, and then they benefit, I benefit, I get a check, it's a win-win, invoice is clear, whatever. But I was just like, where else can we sell? And that's when my brother was like, Walmart, you remember? So he was like, Walmart. My brother, he just think business. So he was like, let's sell at Walmart. Let's sell at Amazon. And in my head, I was just like, no, that doesn't feel good to me. And he was like, what do you mean feel good? Let's get this money. Like, put it in Walmart so it can be more accessible to people. It doesn't matter. You got your feelings. You know? And I was telling him, I said, I'm not selling hats and t-shirts. Like, I'm selling, like, a product. I said, if people go into these stores, these health food stores, they know that they're going for a quality product, so they're gonna spend that money. When you go to Walmart, you know, no offense to Walmart, but it's like I didn't visualize my product at Walmart. I didn't visualize my scene. It just didn't make sense to me. And so my brother was thinking more accessibility, and I was thinking more like people gonna go wherever the product go. I was saying that not like an arrogant way, but based off what I've seen and what I've experienced since, you know, before we got into anything. And so, anyway, I was just like, Whole Foods. So, I was just thinking about Whole Foods because of the feeling. I went to Whole Foods the first time with my mentor years ago. Mm. And the feeling there was different. Everybody's different. The people that shop there, they're happy. You know, like, you don't see someone dragging their feet. You don't see one looking lousy. Like, just the whole atmosphere of Whole Foods.
Because them niggas got money. I'm just kidding. No, they really do.
No, they do take care of themselves. They take care of their employees and stuff there. But I was like, I could see my product at Whole Foods. And then I was just like, I can also see my product at, you know, these stores or whatever. And so how did it transition to there? I don't know. I feel like when you visualize something, I know this is cliche, and a lot of books say this, and a lot of, like, mentors say this, and these gurus. But when you really, really visualize something and you can see it, well, like, I feel like the first thing is to just envision that it's already there, you already have it, and then you just do whatever it takes that is in your hands to just get there.
Yeah.
You know, and then things align. You literally start meeting people out the blue, like the Alchemist book says, the universe conspires to make it happen for you. That's literally what happened for me. Like, people start to come my way that I didn't know. I was introduced to people, I met the right people. They, you know, they helped me, they guided me. But it definitely took some effort on our end too, to do research, to make sure everything was right ingredient wise and all that, because it's not like an easy process. It's not just like a walk in the park. You definitely have to do the footwork.
No, that's definitely true. Okay, so now I want you to talk to us about, because you know, you learned a lot. You learned a lot in this process over the past. You a grown man who got a smoking problem.
That's my problem. I need some CMOS.
So yeah, so you know, you
smoking problem.
Is a he be putting tobacco in his tongue too. So this is what I was saying though. You know, you really learned a lot in this entire process, because you gotta, like, you grew with the business, you know, like, as a person and as an entrepreneur. But I want you to tell us, especially for the baby entrepreneurs, because I feel like there's gonna be people out there who might be, like, you know, interested in business, or, you know, just not even just like business in the traditional sense, but maybe they want to start a nonprofit or something that involves dealing with money with people. What are, like, you know, some tips that you have for them? What are some, like, you know, maybe three lessons or something that you feel like you could impart on them from your journey, you know, the lessons that you've learned?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Three things that I've learned. The first thing is to do it.
Yeah.
Just jump. Stop doing your research. Stop trying to overthink it, because I'm an overthinker too. Just do it. If you start, everything else will align. The second thing is, just be consistent. Like, whatever you're doing, just be consistent. If you're lazy, if it's not in your DNA to work very hard, find a way to make it work for you. You could literally become a millionaire off of your smartphone. It's easy, you know? Just do it. Be consistent with doing it. Third thing is, keep everyone on a as-needed basis thing. Don't give anyone access to your QuickBooks, your Shopify. You know, don't do that. That's one of the biggest lessons that I've learned, you know. Unless it's like your CPA and you have a contract with your CPA that's notarized, stamped, approved, or whatever, don't give anyone access to your Shopify or your QuickBooks where they can see how much money is going in or coming out.
Mashallah. Okay, so I love those tips. I think those are really good, because at the end of the day, like, when you're growing something, you want to try to put, you want to close the gap between, like, how much time it takes for you to think about the, whatever it is, to how much time it takes for you to start. Because a lot of times we get so stuck on, like, the first phase of, like, thinking, okay, I should do this, I should do that. And then it's almost, like, crippling, right?
And it's very
crippling.
Because
what are you going to learn from, like, what's going to teach you better than experience?
Exactly. And I'm one of those people that stay, well, you know this, I stay in my head. You know, a lot of things just happen in my head, and then I'm challenged with execution. But with business, it forces you to execute, because you're not going to make money if you don't execute.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, definitely do it. Whatever it is you're thinking, just do it. Don't overthink it. And you make mistakes, you're going to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's perfect. You always have ways to correct yourself, you know, so, yeah.
Nice. Okay, cool. So I think that sums up pretty much today's episode. We hope you guys have been fed.
Yes.
So
come back and see us in episode 3. Yes. Because there's so much more to learn on this journey.
Period. Yeah. Episode 3, really, let's give them a little sneak peek. Episode 3 is going to be the story of our sister, Soba,
yes,
having
sister.
A home birth.
Yeah, her first baby.
First baby at home.
Home birth. 100% natural, too.
At home, bro. Mm-hmm. In a water, in a pool. It was, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Beautiful.
So we'll have her come in. We'll let her tell her story.
And she has a lot to share, too. Mm-hmm. I think everybody can learn from her story.
No, for sure. I definitely agree. But I feel like that'd be such a good opportunity for, whether you're a man or a woman, just know what the human body is capable of, for
yeah.
real. And
yeah.
to see, like, an alternative of, you know, the things that we're really, like, taught are normal, you know,
yeah.
in the U.S., and see maybe if it's for you, because it was for our, it was for Soba.
It worked for her well.
Yeah.
She can't see herself, you know, giving birth any other way. So
yeah.
maybe it worked for someone else.
Period. Okay, bet. We'll see you guys soon.
Yeah, bye.
See you in the next episode.
Bye.